Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. I love chatting with scientists who are also in touch with their inner mystic and can process information a number of ways. Or a flip side of saying that is that I also love speaking with intuitives and mystics who can also use logic and rationality. And today's guest is just that, a highly respected medical doctor with over 80 peer-reviewed publications. My guest fluidly speaks about topics as far-ranging as COVID and ivermectin, the role of the ancient wisdom book, the I Ching, and even the difficulties of losing friends and gaining new ones following the divisive impact that COVID had on all of us. Before we get to our wonderful guests in the interview, I thought I would share a couple tidbits with you. The first comes from the FDA, who CNN reports will now put a black box warning on COVID vaccines. The black box is the most serious type of warning, which highlights major health risks and serious side effects. I guess it's better late than never, right? Oh, man. And one that I just love from the book, The Holographic Universe, the author says, quote, "And that is why the being of light tell us again and again that the purpose of life is to learn. We are indeed on a shaman's journey, mere children struggling to become technicians of the sacred. We are learning to deal with the plasticity that is part and parcel of a universe in which mind and reality are a continuum. And in this journey, one lesson stands above all others. As long as the formlessness and breathtaking freedom of the beyond remains frightening to us, we will continue to dream a hologram for ourselves that is comfortably solid and well-defined. We are, as the Aborigines say, just learning how to survive infinity," unquote. I love that little nugget. Now, on to our sponsor and our guest. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Dr. Tess Lorre. Tess is a medical doctor, a research consultant, and health sovereignty advocate. Her clinical and research expertise derived from both developed and developing countries includes preparing evidence-based guidelines for the World Health Organization from 2012 to 2021. Dr. Lorre is also CEO of the Evidence-Based Medicine Consultancy. She's the director of EBMC Squared and founder of Bird International. She's also the author of the excellent book Game of Trust, The Lorre Files, something we talk about at length today. Here is my interview with Dr. Tess Lorre. Okay, I am here with Dr. Tess Lorre, advocate for health sovereignty, author, medical doctor, Dr. Tess Lorre. Tess, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tony. I was so delighted to be asked.
Yeah, you know, I have tracked your work since COVID, and I got your excellent book, Game of Trust, The Lorre Files, and read it, and was just really delighted and reached out. And thankfully, you were game to come on and have a chat. So I've been really looking forward to this for quite some time. And we're going to get into all the COVID stuff and the WHO and all the stuff and the book. But before we really get started, maybe just give the listeners a brief background, like where you grew up, maybe where you studied medicine and how you've practiced over the years and where you live now.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah. I must just say that I was really thrilled to be invited to speak about the book because, although it's had good reviews, we haven't sold many copies. So, you know, I think it's quite esoteric to too many. And I'm really pleased that you're open to exploring it more. My background is I grew up in South Africa. Well, I was born there and my ancestry is there. And I studied there. I worked as a doctor in obstetrics and gynecology. And then I lost my first baby, and that was very traumatic. So I had a lot of trauma, I guess, around that, because as a doctor and a mother, I sort of felt like I'd really failed both. And so I focused on having children at that stage. I had three children, and I got into doing research because that was something you could do, you know, whilst having a family. And I got into doing systematic reviews, which was evaluating bodies of evidence. At the same time, I also I did a PhD as well, so sort of entrenched myself in that sort of philosophical mindset, you could say. And then there was another sort of tragedy in my life, and that was a sort of violent home invasion in South Africa. And it was at that point, with three young children, it felt like a very unsafe environment to raise children. And so we left South Africa and we went, we moved to the United Kingdom, where I found, you know, that in actual fact, living in these highly industrialized societies is no fun and games either, that, you know, people are, you know, everyone works very, very hard and is really a slave to the money, and the children get farmed off to school and become sort of parented by the state. So I really felt, certainly by the sort of 2017 or so, that the world just didn't really work well, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but it wasn't what I had dreamed of, really, when I was growing up.
Yeah. We have the same thing here in the States, Tess. Like, there's an upswell of homeschooling, but the schools are not good here. They're not being taught anything useful. They're not being taught critical thinking. They're being taught ideology, frankly, and not good. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing here. You know, I've watched the city I live in really downward spiral in terms of livability, affordability, safety, all that stuff. And I know you guys in the UK, I see plenty of stories and videos about what's going on over there. So, but to your book, you know, one of the things about your book that I thought was really great, because my experience usually with scientists and medical doctors is, you know, they're really in the rational, logical camp, and they poo-poo anything that might be on the other side, anything in the intuitive, you know, sort of magical realm, you know, is just kind of like, oh, come on, that's not for the way that I do things. And to be fair, I know a lot of creatives. I'm an intuitive type. It goes both ways. So it's kind of like the intuitives I know, they just use that one side of their brain. They don't often, you know, use the logical, rational side. That's considered, you know, I'm being pretty general here, but that they're like, I don't need to do that. That's boring compared to my intuitive way of making sense of things, right? And I was so pleased I got your book, and I didn't really know that you had kind of combined the two. So you talk all about your story in medicine and COVID and ivermectin, all these different things, and your story as a research doctor, which is very, you know, left brain. But you also had the I Ching. Did I say that right? Is it pronounced I Ching instead of I Ching? I know I hear it both ways.
Yes.
I say I Ching. So you have this ancient, you know, 2,000-year-old Chinese divination tool where you throw coins as your co-author. And I was like, it took me a minute to realize, oh my God, she's using the I Ching as a co-author. What a brilliant way to write a book. Like, I was like, God, I wish I would have thought of that. And so I was just really delighted to see you take on some, you know, sort of backstory about COVID and the World Health Organization and how you navigated that, those shark infested waters, as somebody that was trying to help humanity and tell the truth. But then you were throwing the I Ching, and the I Ching was weighing in on the situation as well. So how did you come across that as an idea to write the book? I guess is my first question. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're all sort of many, many faceted, and unfortunately we get pigeonholed. As a child, I was very creative and intuitive, and because I excelled at maths and science, you know, I got shunted into the math science department of things. And the next thing I was studying medicine. You know, I was also told I could be an engineer or something. Those vocational guidance teachers are very quick to find you something, you know, that's going to earn your living, so to speak. So I did forget about the whole creative intuitive side for a while, although research is intrinsically creative. You know, you should be, it's because you have all these questions that you set about trying to creatively answer them. But when we'd immigrated to the UK, I established a company called the Evidence Based Medicine Consultancy, and I got into doing these systematic reviews for the World Health Organization as an external consultant, and also the Cochrane collaboration. There was a hospital here with a Cochrane group that hired me and my company. So that was how I was sustaining myself. But round about early 2020, just before COVID, I had been doing a series of systematic reviews on brain tumors treatment and diagnosis. And I played squash quite a lot, sort of four times a week at a local squash club. And this guy that I used to play with, he said, oh, you should meet this eccentric woman at the top of my building who says that she has a cosmic blueprint for the brain. And I thought, well, this sounds very interesting. I'll go along and hear her theory. And I'd no sooner walked in the door and she's handed me three coins and said, throw these coins before I talk to you. So we didn't end up talking about the brain and the way that I had intended to, but instead I threw the coins and I was absolutely shocked at the reading. So I threw these coins and then she handed me a page in a book and she said, read that. And the reading was basically that I'd spoiled something and I'd caused harm and I needed to rectify or remedy it. And I knew exactly what it was talking about because I was going through a rather acrimonious process of divorce with my husband at the time. My mind was just reeling and I thought, well, I've got to get that book. And it was the I Ching, Richard Wilhelm's edition. Obviously, there are many, many versions of this ancient book. But, I left there and the next day we'd been talking, my ex-husband and I, we'd been going to and fro about who gets what and all of that. And I'm sure people who've been through similar processes will know it's very unpleasant. And I just went to him and I said, I'm so sorry. And he said, you can have everything. And I just gave him everything. And that was a hugely sort of liberating process. Although everyone was saying to me, you're crazy and whatever, it really felt like the right thing to do. And I've never regretted doing that.
Wow.
So that was why it was so profound to me and why I started using the book. And then obviously I became very intrigued at how many great people had used the book and referenced it, because the foreword to the Richard Wilhelm edition, which was drafted in the early 1900s, is written by Carl Jung. Carl Jung wrote the foreword for the edition, I think, in the 1940s or so, and he and Richard Wilhelm, who was a missionary to China.
Did he use the I Ching? I don't remember that.
Well, in his 80s, he revealed that he had used it for many decades and found it very useful.
Really?
But he'd been too embarrassed as a man of science to reveal this. And it was only in his 80s he said, "Look, you know, I no longer care anymore what you think. But yes, I used it. I found it enormously useful, and." You know, I can't explain it. I can't explain how it works, but it works, and if it works for you and it speaks to you, you know, use it. It's not for everybody. And I believe that his theory of synchronicity comes from the I Ching, because the I Ching is all based on synchronicity. It assumes that instead of Western science, where you have to control everything, so you have to make sure, for example, if you're doing a scientific experiment, that you have a group that's very homogeneous, and you compare it with a control group that's very similar. So, you know, you'd have to make sure if you're doing a randomized controlled trial, for example, and you're studying one group versus another group, that the groups are similar. They're similar ages, they're similar genders, they have similar conditions, you know, and so on. So you have to control it very closely. And so the results are not generally applicable, if you think of it that way, because we're not all the same. We all have many, many different things going on. But that's how randomized controls work. They're very blunt tools, you could say. Mm-hmm. Whereas the I Ching assumes that most things happen because of a whole lot of other factors that relate to that specific moment in time and mindset and cannot be repeated. And the psychological element of the inquirer. It might be that you're sitting in a certain place when you throw these coins and it's very hot, it's in the sun, and your wife shouts at you or something, whatever happens, whatever's going on in your life, you eat your breakfast, that all becomes part of the experiment. And so because it's not quantifiable by numbers and statistics and reason, books like the I Ching have become out of favor because we live in a very rational scientific framework, and the stuff that we can't explain, we reject. So yep. Everything that we interpret can only be interpreted through the little that we know about how this reality works. And so we reject 99% of the of what mystery, you could say, of the stuff we don't understand. We reject it all and we interpret everything through this very limited framework or filter. So that's the perspective of the I Ching. It's called the Book of Changes. Mm-hmm. And it basically sets about describing, you know, everything depends on something else. And there's one thing you can be certain of is change.
Yeah.
Very relevant book.
How do you use it? I wanted to ask you, you know, is it, do you get up and it's like you have your tea or whatever, and it's like, do you have to have, I worked with it a bit when I was younger, and I remember it was really fascinating. And then I just kind of, you know, I got into life and doing all my other stuff and found other things that I leaned on for wisdom. But is it something that you do, like it's a daily thing, or you might not do it for a few days, but then all of a sudden you feel like, hey, I would like a different perspective, maybe on a situation or something. How do you use it personally for yourself?
I use it daily now because I trust the results I get. And so I might say, it's open-ended questions. What advice do you give me today? Or what do you observe about my actions today? At the end of the day. So I ask for advice or I ask for observations. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, in my line of work, there are people trying to access me all the time or coming in and into my life. And often people will flatter you a lot and say, you know, or offer you something. And so I always, and to be honest, Tony, I didn't ask about you, but usually I will say, what do you think about me accepting a podcast interview with so-and-so? How should I, you know, how would you describe my relationship with this individual? So I'm guided basically on who to interact with and who not to interact with. And that might sound very strange to listeners who have not ever given any thought to divination process. Yeah. But I would like to explain how I think it works. And I think I could explain it now, or I could explain it later on in the conversation. However,
no, let's do it now. It's funny because I was going to ask you if you threw the I Ching for your interview with me because, you know, I know that you're really busy and stuff like that. And I was so pleasantly surprised that you said yes and got back to me. Your assistant got back to me pretty quickly and stuff too. So I didn't know if that was an I Ching thing, but you said you didn't do that. You just said yes anyway. So,
well, sometimes when intuition is enough.
Yeah, it is.
The I Ching basically a replacement for your intuition. If you're not connected and you can't connect to your intuition on something, then that's the time to ask.
Yeah.
But, I was so delighted that you're interested in speaking about this aspect of my work because usually I'm talking about the science aspect.
Yeah. So go ahead and you said you wanted to unpack the I Ching a little
bit. Yes. Well, yeah. I've come to the conclusion that, you know, I think anybody who is questioning this reality is probably aware that things don't really add up. There's something not quite right about this reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I find useful to think about this reality is to think of it like a video game. I think many people, especially, have played video games in the past. So there's the avatar and then there's you, the controller, who's sitting there using your controls, and your avatar's got certain characters and can do all sorts of things and get all sorts of powers and get, you know, defeated and harmed and injured too. And so the I Ching was written as a kind of organic code by our human ancestors to navigate this reality as if it were a simulation or a computer game. I don't like the word computer game or avatar, but it's an easy way, it's an easy analogy to explain this.
Mm-hmm.
So when you throw the coins, it's almost as if you are the avatar in the video game. And what you're doing when you're throwing the coins is you're accessing your player, the person, the spirit that's actually playing you, the owner of you, if you like. Because when we come into this game, we are just a fragment of who we really are in consciousness. Right. We have a much broader, our player has access to the all of consciousness, but we in this game are very limited. We're squished into these human bodies, and we have a certain program that gets played out over our lives that we can choose to integrate and become whole, learn and grow and become great, or we get trapped in the program because nobody tells us that we're supposed to be learning and growing. We get trapped and we ruminate and we nurse our wounds and we remain in a traumatized victim mindset. So what the I Ching does, some people are able to meditate, they're able to use their intuition and navigate even without having those concepts, you know, they walk that path of Lao Tzu, who, you know, you may be aware of the Tao Te Ching, you know, and there's the way, which the Tao Te Ching is the book of the way, and it's how you navigate this reality and find your way home. But the I Ching provides a route to access your player and communicate with your player, irrespective of what the environment is that you find yourself. It could be the emotional environment or the toxic environment, of our planet, that enables you to transcend that and actually receive good advice that might not seem good at the time. You know, you might think, oh, I wasn't going to do that. I'm going to ring her up and tell her what I think of her. But the I Ching might say, you know, just be still today, or, you know, look at your own ego or something. The next day you wake up and you think, well, that was actually good advice because, you know, X, Y, Z has happened, or, you know, so that's my take on it, is that this reality is a kind of a simulation, although it's real. It's not fake. You know, it's real. Everything is very real, but it's almost it's like a repetition of something, a duplication of something that's happened before, or is happening elsewhere. And we, like in a computer game, we have the tools to navigate our way out of it, but these tools, I believe, have been hidden from us.
That's interesting. You know, it's different than the way that I originally thought of the I Ching. I think when I was younger, I thought of it as like a wise elder that was advising me, you know, because I was young. I was like, you know, give me some wisdom here. But what you're saying, it's actually much more interesting in that it's actually, you know, your higher self is directing the play for you. And like to your point earlier, you know, your higher self told you, give your ex-husband the whole thing, the whole kit and caboodle, which sounds insane from an ego point of view, or a small player, if you don't have a higher perspective, a higher dimensional access, you're never going to do that, because you're like, no, divorce is a fight to the finish, and I want to make sure I get my half or more or whatever. And here comes this other voice, and you recognized it as something that was like higher ground, literally. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to trust this whole path, even though my friends are going to say, you're insane. You know, you should be fighting for your, this is a turf war. And you're like, no.
The lawyers were very upset.
Oh, I'm sure they were, you know. I want to shift gears a little bit, because I, you know, you were a consultant for the World Health Organization, and they became, you know, there is this, you know, your book's called Game of Trust, and I don't think there's a lot of trust right now in the three-letter agencies. That is true for the World Health Organization. It's true for damn near everything in the U.S. No, everybody's like been put on notice since COVID. I mean, you and I were sounding the alarm about COVID in our own different ways. Like, you were a big champion of ivermectin, and which turned out to be a brilliantly safe way of treating it. But, you know, the amount of noise and misdirection that came out during this time, you were even canceled and removed off of platforms for asking questions. Tess, for even asking questions, like, I got kicked off of Twitter permanently because I had a couple doctors on and I was asking the questions, are these untested mRNA vaccines, are they really going to help? Are we sure this is a good direction? What about ivermectin? What about hydroxychloroquine? What about these other things? And, you know, now, I think, and I'm interested to get your perspective on it, I think the reputation of doctors across the board, because they just blindly went around recommending a vaccine that was really not tested, all of the different side effects and different things, the World Health Organization, I think, prior, before people really thought about it, or before they were really on the radar for the public, you're like, oh, they're a really great organization that's like, you know, they've got this kind of bird's eye view, and they're integrating all kinds of evidence, and they're going to tell us, they're going to recommend things that are good for humanity. Well, then the truthers start going down rabbit holes, and it's like, this is not a good organization. Who's running this? Who is this, you know, Tedros? Bill Gates is the biggest donor. Like, all of a sudden, it became more and more clear to the truthers, you know, in the alt-right community, which I was part of, they were sounding the alarm bells early on and being called all kinds of names and being canceled. You were working with them, and I thought you did a great job in the book of kind of being fair about it. Like, there's some great doctors that work for the World Health Organization, and I'm like, I totally imagine that to be the case. But that being said, I still don't trust them. I don't trust what they put out, because they did not look with true scientific inquiry into whether or not you know, the vaccines were going to be okay. They did not look, I didn't think, honestly, at whether ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and let's say ivermectin, because that was the big one, they did not act as, they did not use the scientific method that I could see doing it. And so you were on the inside and sounding the alarm, and man, did you become, you know, you were in the crosshairs of narrative warfare. And yeah, I guess anything you want to comment on about your time with the World Health Organization, like I said, you did not necessarily throw them under the bus the way I was. I'm not a doctor. I was an outside observer that was grabbing all kinds of memes and articles and things that people were saying, and I was trying to consolidate it into watch out for these guys. Just because they're recommending something doesn't mean you should do it, was my overall take. And you were sounding the alarm bell about, you know, ivermectin. Like, why can't we look at this and getting drowned out, canceled, and all that stuff? But I'll let you speak about it. And we didn't talk about this beforehand because, frankly, I think you and I can both riff on it. That's kind of my take on it. And then we could talk about decentralized medicine and all this decentralization stuff, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on maybe your
I'd love to speak about those things.
Yeah,
I mean, just for your audience, because they might think that I'm completely woo and far too esoteric, but given what I started with, but mm-hmm. I am a highly cited author. Also scientist.
Yeah.
I have a very high number of publications, of peer-reviewed publications. I think it's at least more than 80, maybe nearing 90 scientific publications that are systematic reviews. And my article, The Systematic Review on Ivermectin, that we published in June 2021, is in the top 10 out of 26 million cited articles in HITS, and citations. So my school and, you know, all those academic scores that are used is very high, relatively speaking, you know, the equivalent of any sort of professor anywhere. So, but I am an independent academic, and that's how I've always liked it, so that I'm not slave to the university or the WHO or anyone else. Mm-hmm. And so the work that I did for the WHO was always as an external consultant. And in 2020, when I saw that they had no evidence at all to call a pandemic, they had no evidence to promote new genetic injections, and they had plenty of evidence to suggest that simple remedies like ivermectin that cost 3 cents a tablet and hydroxychloroquine and other sensible measures, just common sense measures like vitamin C, D, sunshine, etc., would have ameliorated most of the symptoms that people were experiencing that were called COVID symptoms. I realized I had to step in and do something. But at that stage, I was actually, I worked with colleagues remotely. So I had a little office, the top of a building, the pigeons were my friends, and I worked at a computer, and I had no platform. I didn't have a Twitter account or YouTube or anything like that. I had no way of reaching people. And my systematic review, the rapid one that I did originally in December 2020, and that I sent to the WHO and other health authorities, was ignored. So I had to really think about how I was going to get heard and get the message across. And you speak about being cancelled. But firstly, I set up an organization called the British Ivermectin Recommendation Development Group. And that's a sort of standard framing of the World Health Organization. When they call these recommendation meetings, they call them recommendation development meetings. So I just followed what I'd usually been doing. I used the WHO guideline handbook to draw up the recommendations. And I recommended that ivermectin is used for prevention and treatment of COVID. Obviously, if it could be used for prevention, it was a huge threat to the vaccine industry. So they had to really squash it and come down hard on it. And I experienced firsthand with the guy who was actually, his name's Dr. Andrew Hill, who was the appointed consultant to do the systematic review on ivermectin. I experienced firsthand him saying He couldn't, you know, that there were other voices in his systematic review that basically said ivermectin couldn't be recommended for use during COVID until more clinical trials were done. And those trials, just took forever. And they were funded by Gates and others who had investments in the vaccine industry, in the COVID vaccine industry. I really had a difficult task in being heard, and at sometimes I was extremely frustrated. I'll just read one bit about Twitter just to show actually how I used the I Ching and the guidance the I Ching gave me. But it really did tell me it wasn't such a good idea to say what I said on Twitter. I wasn't always just highlighting doctors. On one occasion, I wrote on Tedros's feed, and also a doctor, Maria Karkova, Van Karkova, who was and still is, I think, the COVID technical lead on the evidence, and obviously, has fallen short hugely and is still promoting the COVID-19 vaccines. So on their Twitter accounts, I actually opened a new Twitter account, and I wrote on their messages when they were telling people to take more shots and that the COVID shots were the only things that would save us. I wrote, "The new face of genocide." Such was my naivety in COVID times and with the use of these platforms, social media. I got immediately removed, and my business account got removed as well, because obviously the telephone number was linked. So, and when I asked the I Ching, what it thought of this action back then, because I was using the I Ching retrospectively, I was saying, what do you think of this action and what I said on Twitter? It said, "A wanderer should not demean himself or busy himself with inferior things he meets along the way. The humbler and more defenseless his outward position, the more should he preserve his inner dignity. For a stranger is mistaken if he hopes to find a friendly reception through lending himself to jokes and buffoonery. The result will only be contempt and insulting treatment." And then it sort of stressed again, I'm just jumping a bit in the book, it stressed, "The bird's nest burns up, the wanderer laughs at first, then must needs lament and weep. Through carelessness, he loses his cow, misfortune." So, it was so spot on, saying that, there I'd sort of flippantly written that, and it wasn't really a very clever thing to do, because I lost my platform I had to start again.
Did it impact your friend circle and your family at all? Because I know my views, and the things that I was talking about during COVID, in that I did not take the vaccines. I did use ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. I had a lot of people that were pro vaccine because of the World Health Organization recommendations, their doctors. And it really negatively impacted that. Some of them I haven't really talked to since. That was a long time ago.
It was so frustrating because I'm the only doctor in my family, and none of my family members listened to me. They all took the COVID vaccine.
Yep.
My colleagues at the World Health Organization, who I had a good relationship with, they weren't in the COVID department, they were in the reproductive health department. They all just showed absolutely no interest at all. My friends, I would say mostly they didn't listen. So my friends now, everybody I know now, the wonderful people I know now, are new friends, and it is sort of forming new communities, isn't it? We're being forced to form new communities and be with people who are aligned with, and have the awareness that there's work to be done.
Yeah, exactly. Are we seeing, because of all this, I talked about earlier how trust in authorities right now in the States, and I imagine in Europe, it was probably be the same thing. Trust in authorities right now is at an all-time low. What I mean by that is, it's not just what we're talking about, the medical authorities. It's the education. It's anything the government is saying right now. People are raising their eyebrows, and it doesn't really matter if you're left, right, and center. Yes, the left is more pro-government or whatever, but there's an air of mistrust right now. And I think it's actually a really good thing. If we're talking about the awakening, is about awakening to higher consciousness. To your point earlier, in this game that we're in, or this hologram, or this school for the soul that we all participate in, even though maybe many of us don't understand it that way, sovereignty is a really, really big component, like trusting yourself, trusting your own divinity, your own messages from God or the higher self, however you want to say it. And I think the systems, and I've spoken about this on a number of episodes, the systems don't reflect human sovereignty. The systems reflect a slave system where there's a few globalists that meet and decide whether or not we should do a certain thing, whether or not, you know, climate change, you know, like they kind of make things up. They sell it to us like this is the authority speaking, you must do this. And I think right now people are starting to go, you know what? Everything you recommend turns out to be not great for humanity, right? Like, I remember people thought Bill Gates was such a great guy. I pick on Bill Gates because I live here in Seattle and he lives here. You know, he's such a great guy. The Gates Foundation. Now, nobody talks that way about him. They're like, he is very suspect. He may be a psychopath. He's a eugenicist. That's a euphemism for trying to trim the population. How do you trim the population? Well, you make young girls sterile all over the world, or you try to kill people. I mean, that's what eugenicism is. Like, so I think people are on to how do we build systems that empower humanity, that come from humanity. Even our dependency on tech, like, and I'm guilty of this, Tess. Like, I'm a lazy tech person. Like, I'm like, let me just go on IG. Let me use like Google. Like, I don't want to try to do the hard work of reinventing my interactions with technology to better suit my privacy and better suit my own sovereignty. So I participate in the centralized system, but I recognize maybe humanity's future, and this would be an interesting question for the I Ching, is how do we create decentralized systems in medicine, media, education and stuff, where we really enter into a golden age? How do we use AI in a decentralized fashion rather than having ChatGPT, which is kind of an extension of Google, you know, whatever, like it's the same centralized overlords telling us how things are and telling us what the narrative is. That's a lot to give you, but I thought maybe you could jump in on any of that.
Yeah. Tony, we're in a war. Mm-hmm. It's a war of the inorganic on the organic. So it's a war of dead stuff, technology, inanimate stuff on the living. Mm. And we have to realize that, you know, there's a balance between receptivity and action. So there's a lot of awareness, but there isn't enough action. And the action has to be personal. This is a personal thing. We are in the process of being colonized individually. You know, the pirates used to colonize countries. Mm-hmm. They colonized the British Isles. They colonized, and these are corporations. They colonized Africa. They've colonized Asia, and they've removed culture. Now they're colonizing us, and we're colonized by digital stuff, and we're colonized by injections. Yep. And we're colonized by the stuff that's in the environment, the toxins in the water, the food, the stuff they're pumping into the skies. All of that is to colonize us.
Yep.
You probably know about the biodigital convergence, you know, basically merging computer code with biological code, DNA. Mm-hmm. So this is where we're going, and we're going there very quickly because all of the stuff is happening. So there's only so much sort of navel gazing one can do. One has to get over one's traumas. One has to realize one has a job to do, that there's that action needs to be taken, and we've got to create these new societies. And you've got to start somewhere. You have to imagine that for 2,000 years or so, we've been in a system that has increasingly dumbed us down, degenerated our genetic, our genetics, degenerated our health, and made us increasingly ignorant. So we're at a point where we actually have to take action. We've got to purify ourselves. You know, we've got to purify mm-hmm. in the sense both spiritually, but actually physically. We have to get healthy. We have to detox. We've got to get rid of the heavy metals. We've got to. I'm not talking about going to the gym to work out. You know, we've got to really build our communities, and we've got to, you know, make healthy food, and we've got to grow our own food, and all of these things require action. And stepping away from fear, because a lot of people knock the system. How many people, you know, knock the system and say, oh, the government's this, the government's that, and then suddenly the government's saying, we've got a pandemic and a safe and effective vaccine, and everyone's lining up to take it, and they've never wanted to go along with what the government said before, but they did then.
Yeah. Yeah.
How else, you know, what else are they going to acquiesce to? We need people to start self-governing. Don't think about what other people are doing, what should be done, what the government should be doing. We have to start being self-governing and stepping away from fear. Get rid of that fear, and you're born free. You didn't sign up. You didn't consent to be governed. And we should be acting on our conscience. You know something's not good. Don't do stuff for the money. If you're not enjoying something, don't sell your soul for the money. Don't blindly follow orders. Know that you're part of nature. So we've got to get out into nature as much as possible. That's, you know, if you take a pig out of a pen and you put it into a forest and you leave it there, and I don't know, maybe there's listeners out there who'll say, oh, she's talking absolute rubbish, but I understand that if you take domesticated pigs and you put them in a wild environment, they go feral very quickly. They grow whiskers and tusks and all sorts of stuff.
Yep.
And I believe the same thing will happen with us. I mean, if you look at even if you just looked at somebody, a man nowadays with a shaved face and a short-cut hair, so everybody's got this very, you know, if you just look at it from a very sort of basic point of view and you say, go wild, man, you know, he'd grow a beard, he'd look completely different, have long hair, and probably start to feel different too about himself and his masculinity. So we've got to go wild. We have to go to our natural state, and that's where we find our power and we're able to step away from fear.
I love that, Tess. I think that's a great message. We've been over domesticated. The systems have domesticated us into, you know, looking at our phones, getting our dopamine from there. We're not getting out into nature as much. I think it's an awesome message. Also, kind of get off your butt, stop complaining about the government and the systems when there's a lot of work to do. And like all of us have our areas that we like to speak on that maybe it needs to go beyond speaking and like, well, what do you want to do about the schools or what do you want? I'm glad you mentioned the spraying in the sky, because I'll tell you, I don't know if it's, although I talk to people all over the world and they say, no, they spray here as well. So I know it's everywhere, but Seattle, man, do they aerosol spray us here? I mean, it'll be a beautiful blue sky day. All of a sudden, you'll see two planes zipping back and forth, and they'll leave all this aerosol stuff in the air. It's not contrails. It doesn't disappear. It just stays there. Then all of a sudden, it's really hazy and cloudy, you know, like an hour and a half, 2 hours later. And I don't think... Go ahead.
There's a really good article on my Substack that I posted on Sunday. Mm. I actually cross-posted. It's not my original article. Mm. I cross-posted it, and it's got a document in there that explains the project. I think it's called Project Cloverfield. Mm-hmm. And it is all about chemtrails. It's been going on a very long time, and it is a... you know, it's very entrenched, and the document breaks down everything that's in the chemtrails and also the contrails, and also explains what this project Cloverfield is, and how I think it's Cloverfield, and how it where it came about. And interestingly, they've got some stories of pilots and engineers in the document. And one of the engineers who refused to be named said that the where they are feeding this the chemtrails is out of they have the pumps in the lavatory system. So it's the engineers that are sort of the lowest of the heap. He said there's a hierarchy in the plane engineers, and they all want to do certain jobs and not others. So the jobs that are to do with the cleaning of the lavatories and the honey trucks, he said those jobs are not very desirable. So there's just a small group that does these for many different planes, and that's where they put they have these chemical containers, and they feed it out through the wings, and so that seemed very credible to me, and it would explain why pilots don't seem to know anything about it, and they're not deliberately doing it. They're in the commercial airlines as well as the military jets.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was super interesting. I hope my Substack is A Better Way with Dr. Tess Laurie, and please do subscribe to that. I do try and speak about a lot of current things and how we can set up, a better way, really, how we can work together to co-create a better way.
I love it. We have to wrap this up. I so enjoyed talking to you, Tess. I will you come back and do another episode if we start to uncover some other
I'd
stuff?
I'd love to.
I just think you're incredible to talk to. I feel like we're sitting around the fire and just kicking the tires on all kinds of super important things and what we can do about it. But where can people find you and your work and your book? Where would you like to send people? You just mentioned your Substack. Is there any other place that people can maybe have a touch point with you and really start to look at some of your writing and stuff?
There is a website for the book. It's called lauriefiles.com. That's Laurie with a W, L-A-W-R-I-E, files.com. I also work with an organization called the World Council for Health, and that's worldcouncilforhealth.org. And Tony, we have a big conference that's happening in Rhode Island on the 30th and 31st of May that listeners might want to attend. Mm-hmm. It's called Better Way for the USA, Co-Creating New Health Solutions. And all our conferences, our Better Way conferences, are very solutions focused. And what we do is we have six panels with five speakers on each panel. They only get a short time to speak their solutions, and then they sit in a panel conversation, and it's a Q&A. And we've got some phenomenal speakers like Dr. Brian Ardis, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Pierre Corey, and many others, not just doctors, but we have EMF experts, and we've got Amy Valela McBride, who's speaking about chemtrails and such. So it's very broad basis for everybody. It's not a medical conference, and it's solutions focused. So come and co-create some great solutions for parallel societies and systems with us.
Love
and that's it. BetterWayConference.org.
Okay. Well, Tess, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your insight and your wisdom. You're a voice of courage. You're a pro-humanity voice. Just love what you're about, and we'll continue to support you and your work as we watch this unfold. I just love everything you brought today. So thank you so much for taking time with us.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. What a wonderful and interesting woman. After our recording, we talked about doing another episode where we ask big questions and throw the I Ching and see what emerges. We've never really done anything quite like that on our show, and I think it sounds really interesting. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.